This episode is brought to you by Gin & Co., author website design specialists. If you want a beautiful and functional website to promote your books and brand, reach out to Gin today. His work includes tailored, expertly designed professional author websites. I finally have a website I'm proud to share. And we've got a special offer for Words and Nerds listeners. Reach out today and get a free domain name and website hosting for the first year. You can get their website essentials package, includes domain name, website hosting, backup and security, free for the first year with any website purchase. This is valued at $330 a year. Choose a website designed to bring your author brand to life. You can find more details about this special offer at ginand.co/wordsandnerds. Welcome to the 2024 series of the Words and Nerds podcast. I'm Danny B, author, publisher, and your podcast host. With over 1 million plays, thanks to you, listeners, readers, writers, creatives, teachers, librarians, and book lovers, thank you for coming along for the journey where we bring you relaxed and real conversations about writing and creativity. If you love an episode, you can leave a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also follow the podcast on Instagram or Facebook at Danny V Words and Nerds Podcast. Or you can check out my brand new website designed by Gin & Co. at dannyv.com.au. Welcome to the Words and Nerds Podcast, where we bring literary goodness straight to your ears. Continuing from my creative conversations with Kate Temple and Adam Wallace, today I welcome Joel Macero, who is an international award-winning performance poet and author of his debut graphic novel, Urban Legend Hunters, The Dreaded Mr. Snipe. And he is just one to watch because he's going to have many, many more books coming out as well. Welcome, Joel.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be here. You've had some really good, like Adam and the Temples. That's a few people that, you know, I can't walk in their shoes exactly or fill their shoes or whatever the saying is. That's some good people you've had here so far.
I know. I'm actually really enjoying the creative conversations. Like, of course, I like talking about people's books, but the creative conversations, maybe it's because it's a bit lazier because I don't have to script anything. I say it's uncensored, which, you know, when you interview Adam Wallace, that might be risky, but that's all part of the fun. That's all part of the dopamine, Joel. You never know where it's going
to
go.
Some post-editing bleeps if you need to censor.
I'd rather not. I'd rather let's just see how it goes. Unless it's going to get someone cancelled, I'll probably just leave it and see how it
great.
Goes.
Great.
In the last interview with Adam, I had to leave. We were nearing the end, but we didn't end up doing a proper goodbye because my phone wouldn't stop ringing, and normally I'd ignore it, and I said to Adam, look, I've got to get this. This is something. My daughter had split her head open at gymnastics. And so I was like, I've got to go, dude. And that's how the interview ended.
That's a great that's a bit, well, maybe your listeners now are thankfully hearing that your daughter's all right, I hope.
She is. She's absolutely fine. You can probably hear them in the background because it's holidays in New South Wales. So if you hear some noise, it's just the joy of children. They're probably fighting. Anyway, so.
But this is life as creatives, isn't it? Talking about creative conversation.
That's right. Keeping it real, Joel. And I told them to be quiet literally 5 seconds ago and they're already noisy. So we're just going to roll
with
that.
That's just won't happen. That's totally fine.
Always optimistic. Always optimistic. Now, this conversation can actually go anywhere, which is exciting. Right. It's really exciting. But I mean, we first met, we've got this story, we'll tell this story later, but we met, but your thing is words, right? Words making your audience or your reader feel something, words to engage young people. I kind of want to know where this love of words came from, because not only do you have a love of words, your delivery of these words and the meaning of them, like, it's amazing, and this is why we loved you straight away. So tell us about how that sort of began.
Well, for me, I remember, I was thinking about this the other day, because there's moments in my life where I became a writer, but my love of words was like well before that. And I was thinking about those moments in my childhood the other day of my dad, who normally has quite a dulcet tone and talks a little bit like this, who would love reading us like Narnia and The Hobbit and those old fairy tales and stories. And I remember when he did that, he would put on the voices and he would become the Gandalf, the wizard. And he loved that. And I think there's something that was instilled in me from that really young age of listening to Narnia and The Hobbit and all those kind of things. And found, as a child, I'm sure I would have been taken into the story and into those worlds through the performance of it, linked to the performance. And so I think from a young age, I always realized that I had a passion from words, but also there was something about the performative element that was there too. Yeah.
I love that. So your dad must have a bit of that too, a bit of that, you know, love of performance, even if it was just for bedtime reading.
My dad is like, he's retired now, but he was a professor of robotics and computer science.
Wow.
Very different in his perceiving the world as I was.
Okay, so how does a professor then, when you go to your dad and say, Dad, I'm also going to be something starting with a P, I'm going to be a performance poet.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That was, you really want to go into my my issues with my dad story?
not the first question. I'm just interested because I love that. I love how I'm an only child, right? So I never grew up with siblings. Yeah. So I didn't. And only now when I have kids and they're so different. And I'm like, how are they so different? They've got the same parents, the same school, the same experience. They're literally always together, those two. And they're so different. And so I love that, you know, that you and your dad, you connected over stories, and yet you also, you know, in life have taken very different directions. So I love that similarity difference in families because it still blows my mind. Yeah. I needed to grow up with a sibling to sort of understand this. It's still really exciting for me to go, oh my God, they're so different. Everyone looks at me and go, yeah, it's what siblings do.
That's what they do. Yes, we do. Very different. His was probably a little more of a stable path than being a poet, but you know, it's all come good.
It's all, and it's going to just even get better. And that's the annoying thing about creativity. I don't know if it's annoying, but you know, it's kind of like compelled to do it. You know, I don't think if you don't have that sort of creative need to create, you could just, you know, do those other jobs, but it's such a calling that you have to do it, but it doesn't always pay the bills. And so, you know, you've got that sort of continual balance of trying to balance, you know, life and that creative calling and all those other responsibilities.
Yeah. And then I think when it does start to pay the bills, your creativity inevitably changes as well.
Tell me more about that.
Well, I think because all of us start our creativity, whether we were kids or teenagers or adults, started our creative work as out of a passion or perhaps out of a catharsis because we were going through hard stuff and it came out as creative, whatever it might be. And so it was very focused on, for me, like very focused on my love of words mixed in with this sense of processing through my own stuff of life. And then you start to earn money from it, which is great. And there's kind of, I don't know, I think about it as a little bit of kind of the myth of the full-time creative of like, if only I could be that full-time creative, then when the stars align, then I'll be able to do this and I'll be able to write nonstop and I'll be able to do this and do this and do this. And then when you become a full-time creative, there is a heck of a lot of admin and logistics and emails, and it's running your own business and it's highly stressful and you're trying to work out where money is and you're trying to get yourself out there, and very easily you start to, your creativity, like when, if you just had a normal job, your creativity starts to be the little side thing, even though it's your full-time career, so to speak. So I think for any, whether you're full-time creative or part-time creative, I think retaining and holding on to that passion and allowing the passion to change as well and to morph, just as any relationship kind of does, it's really important somehow to hold on to that passion as well as earning the dollars.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I still think we'd all be better off if we just lived in some kind of like community, shared community, looked after each other's kids, grew our own food.
If
anyone is up for that, just call us because I'm so keen for that. Have some goats. I don't know. Are goats useful? Someone's going to come at me for not knowing about farming, but I don't know anything about farming.
That's okay.
Can't know everything, Joel.
No, but I do wonder, I mean, community is a massive part of it, though, in terms of allowing us to do what we do.
Right, absolutely. Yeah. And they say that's why we're so, I read this thing the other day, which was so interesting. They were like, so many people have got anxiety at the moment, yours truly included, but we're not being chased by lions anymore. There's not that fight or flight response, but because there's so much responsibility and there's cost of living and we don't bring our children up in villages anymore, and all those things, we wake up and the job, the responsibilities, the money, they become the lion.
Yeah. Yeah, but absolutely. The thing that has to fight.
Right? That just blows my mind. I'm like, oh, no wonder I wake up in panic attack. The lion is chasing me. It's just metaphorical.
Yeah. And when we got a lion chasing us, then it's also then very easy to lose all the creative passion. Like when you're...
Yeah,
that's right. Languages, et cetera.
Although I've got to say creativity has helped me. Let's call anxiety the lion now, has helped me push through with that lion. But I do want to get back to community. I mean, I know we're not opening our own commune yet. Watch this space. but talk to me about creative communities, because they're so important for me. I mean, this is what the podcast was built on, you know, and I say it's more than just a podcast, and it is, because to me it's a community of people who want to create. It's bringing, you know, books to life and conversations to life, and this conversation, just talking about creativity, which you don't always get to do, particularly with, you know, family members who may not love the creativity or be into it. You can't just sit around talking about that all the time. So tell me about community.
I think, can I read a poem?
You can do whatever you like.
Being a poet, why not?
Unscripted, uncensored, do whatever you like.
Unscripted and uncensored, because I think it, for me, this speaks to, it's a poem called Lost Things, that I just have my poetry books here, and so I thought I would read it. It goes something like this, because I think it plays out what we're talking about. In the midst of everything that exists, there is a solitary city. And in this solitary city, there is a leaning building. And in this leaning building, there is the smallest flicker of an orange glow through tiny window. Blink and you'll skip it, disregard it, not notice. Of course, there are other buildings complete with orange glow in this city of steel and cement and sharp distinction. Even some front doors are a welcome to the stranger. But this tiny window, up high and tall, it is a beacon for the forgotten ones, the undesirables, the left behind playthings, the dropped out, kicked out scraps of a life gone by. They huddle up together by the fireplace. There, gather around the ember, warming cold hands, a one-eyed pixie doll, an engine with three wheels, a father who forgot his son's name, a stranger who never found a friend, a lonely woman. Would you look at them if you could, through the window aglow with a warmth not often seen? They are still a listless handful of vagabonds and tweezed shirt sleeves. They are a mess of cotton spools and a splotchy dress and a toothache and a coughed up furball. They're a past mistake. They're a moustache cut in half, a fear formed into a shadow, a forgotten regret, an empty fishbowl, a dusty record player, a lost bloody sock. In short, they're nothing to take notice of and nothing to dream about. And yet, when they gather here, in the warmth of the glowing room, in the leaning building, in the solitary city, in the midst of everything, when they sit by side, when they look each other in the eye, it's then they realize the most important thing that any misplaced thing could ever let you know. Because it's then they realize that even lost things glow.
Poetry always sounds better when you read it.
It does. It's meant to be read.
Oh, I think you read it when Joel McCarrow reads it.
You can read some poetry for us, Danny.
Sorry, I really interrupted.
Oh, no, that's okay. I think, like, I wrote that poem out of, I mean, I've got to travel the world for a long time, 15 years, it's been my full-time thing, traveling and performing and going into creative communities and meeting a whole lot of lonely, misplaced people trying to figure out their own anxiety, their own stresses, their own life, what that looks like. And in the communities, whether it's a poetry community, the kid-lit community in Australia, all these different communities that I've got to meet around the world, there's something happens when the misplaced things get together the people who have always felt slightly different, awkward, a colored color in a black and white world kind of idea. When they come together, it's this beautiful glowing thing that happens, and people go, I belong. I've found my people. And that is truly amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. And the finding the people thing, it's such almost a relief, and it's such a good place to be, you know. And I was having this conversation just the other night when we were all together for our little community that we have, and I was speaking to someone there, and you know, we're saying just our philosophy is just come as you are, you know. There's a couple of us with allergies, bring your own food. There's a couple of us who need to, you know, bring our own chair or bring our own whatever, because we have all these things as we're growing older, these things that we're managing. And I just said, that'll be in 5 years. bring your own whatever it is you need to be comfortable and to have a good time, you know. So I really had that conversation. I really think I'm trying to do that more, you know, just come as you are and just be there, whoever you are. You know, I have a food allergy. I'm going to turn up with my roast chicken half the time to dinner. That's okay. I'd rather just feel safe, you know. And if someone else needs to turn up with their whatever, or they need to go home early, or they want to stay late, or whatever you need, just come as you are. And I try and have that philosophy now with everyone that I hang out with, you know. And if someone doesn't like you and they don't enjoy your company, that's cool. Just go with some. Just let's just admit that and, you know, move on to other spaces where you do feel welcome. So I think the two philosophies about community that I've got is never be anywhere where you don't feel welcome. Life's too short.
Yeah.
And just have communities where you can actually come as you are, you know, whether on that particular day you're full of beans or you're feeling weird or you're anxious or you need to bring your chair or your chicken, whatever, just bloody come as you are. Do you know what I mean?
You're getting poetic. Chairs and chickens.
Might write my own poem later, Joel.
That's really funny. That reminded me of as well is come as you are is an old, so I and I know James Layton as well, both, well, James was part of the kind of Christian scene ages ago, and I grew up in conservative Christian scene up in Sydney, and come as you are was like the altar call song. There's a song
also Nirvana.
So maybe, oh yes, and yes, that's true, Nirvana song. But it just gave me some memories of the altar call moment.
But sometimes places, I'm not naming anywhere specifically, but sometimes places say come as you are, but also follow all these rules and do all this other stuff. So you don't actually leave as you are. Just come as you are, but we'll fix you and we'll change you and we'll shape you and we'll, you know, put this little round peg in a square hole, all that kind of stuff. Whereas my full stop is just come as you are. That's it.
Totally. Yeah. Come as you are, be who you are. It's so it's so crucial in a very dislocated, isolated world, like so many people who, especially coming out of COVID a few years ago, et cetera, like there's so much loneliness. And I think creativity absolutely is one of those things that can bring us together in a way that both says come at you are, and I'll also honor who you are. Like, I'll honor the differences between us. And even if we disagree, even if you are a right wing whatever or a left wing whatever, there's something about creativity that can actually bring us together to a place. And maybe it's about, like, creativity demands that we listen to people's story, and it demands our vulnerability. And I think in that space, you can't just put the label of whatever conservative right wing whatever or tree hugging hippie leftist whatever. you're actually forced to sit with people and their hearts and their loss and their grief and how they became who they are. Like, that's, I think, the invitation of creativity and of creative community.
Yeah, I love that, and I love honoring who you are as well. And I feel like as I grow older, it's just, you know, this is who I am. And I'm sure we've all put on masks before, particularly, you know, when you're in high school or you're in your 20s or whatever, and you've tried to be something else or fit into something else. And it's just so incredibly freeing as an adult to go, you know what, I'm not doing that anymore. You know, of course we all want to be liked, but I don't want to be a people pleaser and the same thing. I just want to be around people who I like, who they like me, and you don't have to put on any of these masks, which I think we continually do in society, you know. So just be who you are, as long as you're a decent human. That's cool, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And for me, that was hugely my story is growing up in high school. I squashed all the creative stuff down, the stuff that made me weird and different and strange. I pushed it all down and rejected it all for the sake of belonging. It wasn't really belonging, but for the sake of fitting in. And we kind of get rid of this thing. And so I think perhaps, again, the invitation of creativity is to, I don't know, to become friends with the people we once were, to like those things that I forget who it is. Someone, I think there's a writer named CJ Cascioto, and I think it's something like he says something like the thing that makes you weird is not the thing you should run from. It's the thing you should shape your whole life around.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Like run into it, lean into it, give yourself to the weirdness. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think as you become older, you become more confident to do that. You know, like I try and do that with my kids at the moment, and they do that sometimes, and, you know, it's really proud moments when they do, but there's still a lot of that conforming when you're young. But I think that's growth as well, because you've got to conform to then realize you don't need to conform later on, you know. And I think that's part of the growth area. But I'm always putting it into my head, so you don't have to do that if you don't want to, like, you know, you can just do whatever you want. Well, if I say it's okay and it's safe, you can. There are boundaries.
You can also hurt yourself or somebody. Yes,
but you don't have to be exactly like everybody else in the class, you know. So I hopefully that will grow, and it does. I think it's interesting when you go to a school system, and I feel like school is very like you need to conform and wear that mask and just, you know, be a little robot so you can fit in. But then university just, or any of those creative pursuits, undoes that completely. And all of a sudden everyone wants you to be weird and original, and you're like, oh, wow, this is where I can, okay, finally be myself. But it's a weird journey, isn't it?
It is a strange journey. And I think because during high school we're not taught how to embrace the freedom and to kind of also embrace any freedom. It's not going to be freedom if we end up totally screwed over by it or screwing the world over because of it. If we're like, well, I can do whatever I want, stuff, caring for the environment, et cetera, et cetera. So
I've got look at all my plastic straws.
I think for us to help people learn how, like, I don't know, to embrace the freedom and at the same time go, oh, there's responsibilities with their freedom. Yeah. Like, that's what I'm doing as a parent, is helping my kids do that. And when we don't have that, then we get to uni and we're like, well, F it all the rules of my experienced at home, et cetera, growing up, screw it all. And then we can do ourselves some damage.
Yeah, in the process. Absolutely. I'm not against boundaries. I'm sorry if that sounded like I was. But I think, you know, we love using the term loose cannon, right? But there's a point of loose cannon where you don't want to be, you know? You want to be part of that loose cannon where you, you know, sometimes you'll say something because that's just what you think, and sometimes you're a little bit filterless and you're ready to go on an adventure. That kind of loose cannon's fun. But then you get too loose cannon, I think that can also get a bit dangerous. So it's all about, you know, being yourself, but also, you know, sort of not breaking the law, not ruining things. That kind of thing.
Yeah, and just not point, like, as a loose cannon, not pointing your cannon at other people.
Oh,
like,
that should be... I love that. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You're actually pointing it in the sky for fireworks. That's all you're doing.
Yes, that's right. Yes, not someone's head who you dislike.
No, not at all. Not at all. And I think it's okay. Like, it's a really hard thing as an adult to go, okay, not everyone's going to like me. But it's also very freeing to go, that's okay. I'm going to surround myself with the people that do. And very few people who don't like us, that's okay, you know, because everyone can't be your people. And I think, you know, the more and more I think about it, you know, I'd much rather sort of some small knit groups in my life than a bazillion friends who never call you, you know, or who, so it's got to be about, you know, that quality as well. But yeah, I love that. I do think that when we all get together as a creative community, I think what a wonderful bunch of weirdos, because we all are.
Yeah,
and it's just
totally.
It just feels comfortable to be that, you know. I love that.
Yeah, and I love that as well. That our job as writers and as kid lit writers and junior fiction writers, et cetera, is speaking into, like, we're speaking into that age where there's so much pressure on kids to conform. And when the slightly weird, slightly different kids who are the creatives or love poetry or love whatever it is, like the joy of my life is I get to go in, I've gone into schools for 15 years and it's fascinating. I'll see like, I'll be teaching and the kids will be like, no, I hate poetry. Right, I want to do creative writing. It's just whatever you're going to do in English. And then the same kids, I'll go out at lunchtime and I'll be in the library and these kids will be sitting there reading graphic novels. Like these kids who were totally reluctant readers, et cetera, who just haven't found their place. There's library spaces. Cheers to the librarians. I teach to librarians who create these safe spaces for kids to be themselves, that they don't have to conform. They can come and read and connect and read their graphic novels. And like, that's such a beautiful thing that we get to write into that and speak into that and encourage them and say, be who you are in that space.
Yeah. But you also turn poetry on its head too, you know, because I imagine most kids think poetry is really boring, right? Same as if, until you see Shakespeare on the stage where it's meant to be, you know, you think, oh, Shakespeare's boring. And then you watch it or you watch it reimagined and it's like, oh, that's amazing. Like, same with poetry, you know, you say, oh, I'm a performance poet, and they all roll their eyes, and then you start performing, and then they go, oh, okay, so poetry doesn't have to be this thing, even though I find poetry very interesting. Poetry can be many different things, and I think that's you know, the gift that you give to kids and the gift that we saw you give to kids at the first year in Somerset in 2022, I think we met you.
Yeah. That's what I'm trying to do. That's what I'm trying, as I go into schools and do all the school stuff that I do, there's huge, because poetry hasn't been taught well in a lot of schools, and especially wasn't during my upbringing. So I have the joy of getting to smash kids' perceptions of what poetry is and, this is actually, and sometimes I do it through comedy and sometimes I do it through like, actually when you're going through the shitter and everything sucks, that's the time to grab a pen and start writing, just as your favorite musician does. And it's incredible what comes out of these kids. Like it's amazing words they write.
Let's go back in a little time machine, because I do want to tell people a story of how we met, because it's a funny story. And then obviously what was created from there, and then your journey as a writer, you know, because you're writing more and more things as well. So we saw you performing at Somerset. It was our first year at Somerset Storyfest. This is Larrikin House. James and I went up. And we were sponsoring the event because I just loved Somerset. I loved how they just bust in tens of thousands of kids and they're all there to celebrate books and authors. Like, I wanted to be a part of this. So once I put on my very persuasive skills and said, James, if you need to sponsor this, we need to go to this. You know, it's always getting, my life is continually getting stuff over the line, Joel. So we get there and we're like, let's check out.
Getting people to do what you want them to do.
Well, yes. That may be the only child coming out. We won't dwell on that any further. It's another podcast. So we saw you performing. We said, let's go for a walk, you know. So we went for a bit of a walk around and we saw you in front of a lot of students. I think it was in the big hall or something, and you were performing, and I was like, oh man, this is awesome. Because I was an English teacher for 17 years, always loved, you know, performance poetry, slam poetry, all those things. And so we stayed and watched and we're like, how are all these kids so engaged by poetry? So that was the first amazing thing, you know. Then we went on a continual little journey around the place, and then we ended up at the Green Room, and Andrea was like, Andrea, who is the Queen of Somerset, she's amazing, she comes in and she goes, amazing. We think Joel should perform for you. And we're like, cool, like we're just sitting there eating chips, right? So bring it. And then you came in and you did this amazing, it was quite a serious one, can't remember exactly what it was, but it was just everyone in the room was silent. I remember the beautiful Sue Whiting was crying, and we were just sitting there going, wow, like this is great. And how powerful words, we all know words are powerful, you're speaking to the converted, we're in the Green Room, right? But I just thought, this is really powerful for kids as well, you know. So then I had to get something else over the line. We're outside, you know, in the big little pergola thing. I call it pergola, but it's not, it's something much more magnificent than that. And I said to James, we need to sign this guy because he's engaging kids and he's in front of kids and he's at this festival and he doesn't have a book. And I said, we have to sign this guy. So I remember we grabbed you and said, let's have a chat. And we were sitting outside. It was lovely. And I think I said to you, do you have a manuscript? And Joel, what did you say to me?
I said, yeah, I do. I'll pitch it to you tomorrow.
And did you have a manuscript?
I had no manuscript, no.
That's my favourite story ever.
I had an idea. I had an idea for something that I had in the plane as we flew up. I had an idea for a junior fiction kind of novel. That's all I had.
So you're like, yes, I'll show you tomorrow, which, cool.
So then I went back to the hotel and I wrote it.
Tell me about that. Is that why you couldn't, like, you weren't coming out that night? I can't remember.
Yeah, basically.
No, I feel a bit ill. Sore throat.
No, I went, and I mean, in terms of creative conversation, like, part of it is that I knew that I could do it, as in, and that, I don't want that to sound egotistical, but I knew that I could do it because I, for the last, what was it back then? So it's about 12 years now that every day I've written a poem for the last 12 years. Yeah. And so then 10 years of every day writing poetry, forcing myself to, whether I want to or not, whether I feel like it or not, come hell or high water, I write a poem. Sometimes just one sentence, tiny little something. But because of that, I think that's the reason why I was able to hear, like, be given opportunity. And people always talk about kind of, oh, so lucky getting that. But I think it's that whole being prepared to be lucky. Those who are lucky are prepared.
Absolutely. Like, well, you're not just sitting around. Ready to go. Yeah, you're not just sitting around on your lawn eating burgers going, offer me some contracts. Like, you're out there doing the work, right?
Yeah.
You're out there doing the work, inspiring, and you're engaging people. And we knew you could do it. We hadn't read anything of yours, but we'd heard it. And we're like, well, you're really bloody good with words. You're really engaging. Let's just put that into a book.
let's do it in a book, yeah.
So I think the next day we met again. Did we meet again outside? I don't know. You know how memory shift. I'm just going to say we met outside because it was glorious. And I think you pitched it or read it to us or something to us.
Yes. Yeah. I'd written like a 1500 word, like, kind of junior fiction-ish, picture booky kind of story that I essentially performed to you. It was very performative. It was quite poetic in its language, as I always am. And you liked it.
Loved it. And then, so what I need to do again, I've talked about lots of things, getting things over the line. So then I think you and I worked on it a bit. Like, I was like, oh, what about this? What about this? Only because I've got to get things James ready, right?
Yeah.
And my influence only goes so far because, you know, he has to pay for everything. So I was like, let's get this James ready. So I remember we went back and forth, blah, 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 blah. And then we had a meeting.
That's when we decided to do it as a graphic novel and stuff as well.
Yes, yeah. So then it changed to graphic novel. And then I think you came up with the title Urban Legend Hunters. I tried to take credit for that. And then you reminded me it was actually your idea. So you can have that. Maybe we came
I think it was only in a conversation.
It was.
So I think it was only in a conversation with you. And then I said about this, I don't know, Urban Legend Hunters. We're like, oh, actually,
oh,
that's a great
title. So I just love how it turned into this, us meeting you, us seeing you perform, and then fast forward 3 years later, you have your book launch at Somerset, and you know, Urban Legend Hunters, The Dreaded Mr. Snipe, it exists, you're writing another
it's
one,
out in the world.
You've got more contracts coming, you've got more things coming, so I feel like it's just such a really nice journey, and I really like that idea, because, you know, we have a lot of writers or aspiring writers listen to the podcast, and I think it's prepared to take those opportunities. I don't want to say lucky, because lucky feels like it just landed in, like you've won the lottery, right? And you just scratched a scratch deep, you know, but both of us have worked really hard before we got any contract, right? I was doing the podcast for 6 years before I got a contract, you know, I was writing for years, I did English Lit at uni, all that stuff. So it's like, it's like, you know, you're preparing yourself for something that's gonna happen.
Yes. And then running with the opportunity when it does. I call them pixie dust moments.
Oh, I love
like
that.
Like those moments that are, because I think, like, as creatives, even in our creative processes, we can make things good. Like we can make good art, but there's something almost, I don't know, indescribable, something beyond us that takes it from being good and makes it great. And I have it all like in performative moments. I can perform something one night and it's good, it's fine, and people are moved. And then, like that green room moment, it was like pixie dust is just there. There's this thing that takes it from being good art to being great art. And I don't know if we have any, I mean, we can put ourselves as vessels for great art and to come through us. I don't know if we have any, I don't know if you can contain that thing that is pixie dust. Maybe the joy of it, the magic of it is you can't. But yeah, but even in these moments, I think it's like pixie dust moments is when the opportunity is there and the magic is in the room and someone says, hey, have you got a script, a manuscript? Or someone says, hey, jump up. Because even my poetry, so much of my poetry career began. I remember we're sitting around one night having a chat in a communal house years and years ago, and someone was like, oh, there's a thing on tonight, a little creative conversation at a cafe, should we go along? And we're like, oh, and there was just the tiniest little something, I don't even indescribe, tiniest little thing inside that was like, actually, let's go. So I went along to that night. Someone at the door is like, hey, Joel, you're a poet, could you jump up and do some poetry for us?
No way.
And I was like, yeah, okay, I'll get up and do it. So I got up and shared a poem, and I'd only been a poet for a very small amount of time, like not long. I jump up and did it, and someone came up to me straight afterwards, is like, hey, I've got a night up in Sydney tomorrow, can I fly you up tomorrow to perform at this night to a few hundred creative artists? I went up and did that, and I can look at all the things that I've done throughout the world, because I've got to kind of travel all over the place. So many, I reckon 80% of those things that I've done around the world is because of that one moment.
Wow.
Pixie dust moment that you don't know that it's a pixie dust moment. It was just like, yeah, okay, run with the intuition. I'm going to do this. I'm going to step courageously forward and go, yeah, sure, I'll do a poem.
Wow.
Who knows what? Yeah.
Yeah, and it's about meeting people too. You know, sometimes you meet these people and you're like, wow, and you don't know at the time. Oh. And then something magical happens. And I often think that's something like, you know, when someone has charisma. I don't think you can learn charisma. You know, it's just that magic that happens, or you've got, or something. Yeah. You know what I mean?
X factor.
X factor, I love that. X factor. And that's
it's reminding me of Seinfeld. What did Kramer call it? Something that... Oh. The lure of the animal. I forget what the word he is for it. But
oh my God. I have to Google that now. I absolutely have to Google that. In other news, I'm actually seeing Jerry Seinfeld.
Are you?
When he comes to Melbourne. Yeah.
Oh, that'll be fun. That'll be great.
Yeah, just like, it's just that nostalgia, right? Oh, hang on. Yeah. It's Kavorka.
Kavorka. That's it. Of course.
I can't believe that I would ever forget that, because James says Kavorka all the time.
Why is that not surprising?
Next catch up, we all need Kavorka t-shirts.
The lure of the animal.
The lure of the animal. Wow, this conversation's taken a little bit of a turn.
Pixie dust to the lure of the animal.
Same. But yeah, and that's what I think is interesting about creativity, right? Like, I was a teacher for 17 years. I went to uni, studied to be a teacher, became a teacher. Creativity is not like that. You can do zero workshops. You can have a PhD in creative writing, and nothing is guaranteed on either side of the spectrum. Nothing.
Yeah.
So I think there's the magic in creativity. I think that's why it's a calling. So you're going to do it anyway. You know, I didn't start the podcast because I thought I was going to get a million plays one day. I did it for good mental health and good conversations, and I was in the middle of having, you know, two kids under four, going, I think I need my brain to do something else. As much as I loved my children, they wouldn't talk about literature with me at 3 and 5. Like, come on.
Little shit.
Still hadn't figured out how to read yet, right? So I'm like, what do I do? But it's those little magic moments. And you know, I remember people saying to me, well, why would you start a podcast? There's heaps of podcasts. And I'm like, yeah, you're right, but I'm going to do it anyway. And do you think I knew anything about podcasting? Not really. Just did it anyway. Right. And I think you've just got to take those opportunities. And like, if a podcast didn't work out, like, it's not going to ruin my life. Oh, well, I did a podcast once. So what? I did half a master's degree in politics.
Did you?
I did. And then halfway through, it's quite an expensive hobby, I was doing really well too. Like, I didn't quit because I was crap at it. I just got bored of it. I was like, yeah, I don't think I actually want to do this.
Right.
So I have half a master's degree in politics.
Was the desire to be like the next Julia Gillard?
Look, there was a lot of things.
Julia Gillard to words and nerds.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. There are a lot of things that I thought, you know, as a politician, you have the power to change things for the
You
good.
can have to,
But
yes,
then,
yeah.
I don't know, I came a bit cynical and I went, oh, maybe you don't. Maybe you just have to toe the party line, and what you really wanted to do, maybe you can't do that. And I thought, maybe I can make a difference somewhere else, like in teaching and in, you know, in creativity and talking about books that change the world and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it's not being a doctor, but you know, you can change, we can each change the world in little ways.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, your
absolutely.
podcast, The Deep Place, I've been on that.
Yeah,
podcast.
The Deep Place. Okay. Yes, you have.
We got very deep on there.
You did.
So you talk about, you know, lots of things, spirituality, and you talk about creativity. And we talked a lot about mental health. So how does that all factor into your creativity, just spirituality, you know, to your own mental, physical health, your own sort of, you know, growing up feeling awkward, all that stuff? How does that all feed into creativity for you?
Yeah. I think that whether we like it or not, I think our inner lives come out in our creativity. And that, like, the final product of things, yes, can just be a funny and fun, entertaining, like the heart of Larrikin is just let's have Larrikin House is just let's have, like, have kids laugh again is a beautiful thing. To have them read books and laugh is just that is enough. But I think even as we're doing books for kids that kids just laugh at, we're still tapping into the stories within us.
Yep.
And those stories of I forget who it was, but someone once said it's like inside us we have both our aching pain and our delicious hope, and both of these things are really important for us to hold on to. And for me, creativity is the way that I articulate both of these things, the aching pains of my life, the broken stuff, the hard stuff, the things that I'm going through. And also so that maybe I don't just become victim to the aching pain. I think creativity then calls us to delicious hope, to see perhaps if we can name what is fractured and what has been broken by systems of society, by our own selfish whatevers, whatever it might be, the way we protect ourselves. If we can name that stuff, then we can also begin to see that there's hope to come out of that stuff. There's hope to for our own lives and perhaps for society as well. And so I think my creativity, I'm always trying to both, I don't know, name the reality that is and call me forth to start with, and then us in general into who we could be, into being better people as individuals and as better people together. So I think my creativity holds together my spirituality, my relationality, my emotionality, my psychology, like all my mental health, all of that stuff. Kind of brings it all together, and this is the vulnerable thing of creativity, says, well, this is me, and may the road that I've gone on draw you deeper into yourself and into who you are, drawing forward in your
absolutely.
Life.
Absolutely. And that's what I was thinking when you were talking, because if we're giving ourselves, you know, the aching pain, the delicious hope, someone else is going to see that and relate to that and go, yeah, that's also me, or I relate to that character or that feeling, or I felt that way in my life. And that's how we connect people with books and words, and we speak to our readers. So I think that's really special.
Yeah. And then, because then it takes us, I mean, even with something like Urban Legend Hunters, back to the book, is that there's, of course, it's a funny, hilarious book about spookiness and urban legends and that kind of thing. But at the heart of it, there is monsters, there's spooky, there's horror, and you have our easy ability to take those things that are different to us and call them monsters and absolutely. Be afraid of them.
Yeah.
And part of give away the urban legend hunters, but part of the movement is the discovery that, oh, those things we most fear and called monsters, perhaps they're just frightened beings, perhaps they're just people who need love, those people we are tempted to throw stones at and to cast out because they're whatever.
Asked to come as they are, Joel.
To come as they are and to honor who they are, back to creative community. Yeah. So I love that even in our in the junior fiction stuff that we write, in the stories that we write, they're funny and they're hilarious and they're full of spooky and whatever, and adventure and whatever else. But the thematic always comes through.
It does, absolutely. Yeah. And sometimes you know that consciously when you're writing it, and sometimes you don't know till after you've written it. So with that's right. Because my epic dad, meant to be completely slapstick, ridiculous, you know, dad getting himself into pickles all the time. But as I was reading it, I was like, this is actually about resilience and taking yourself out of your comfort zone and being optimistic and about the family unit, you know, having each other's backs, you know. And I didn't know that when I was writing, but I read it back. I'm like, yeah, this is more than just dad, you know, falling into wombat holes. this is, you know, kind of really special stuff. So.
Well, that's the beauty of it too, is because you could have sat there and gone, I'm going to write a book about resilience. Or I'm going to write a book at, like, often when I think when we start with a theme, just a creative tip here. I think when we start with a theme, we can become too preachy and over, like, heavy handed with that theme. But I think when we start with story and just the dad falling into the wombat hole, then I think we can allow ourselves to tell a story and still for it to have the depth, the thematic depth, but not to be preachy and propaganda-ish
That's right, because you can read things, and I love that when you can read books in multiple ways. You can read it just for pure entertainment if that's what your mood is at the time, or you can dig a little deeper and go to all those other thematic spaces, and that's what's so great about creativity. So I love all of that. And you know what I love about creative communities? We never sit there and talk about the weather or the petrol, because we talk about this stuff. You know what I mean? We talk about this stuff. That's what I love. And, you know, even, you know, when I've been watching all these teenage shows with my kids, you know, those sort of middle grade-y shows, and they're all talking about each other, and there's all just lots of drama because it's school holidays here. And I'm just like, so good to be free of that. But, you know, I feel like in these communities, we don't talk about people unless it's a good thing. We just talk about creativity and our thoughts ideas, and our next creation and our ideas and something that was cool. And, you know, never once have I heard someone mention petrol prices at our gatherings, and thank goodness for that.
I'm going to do it next time. I'm going to come.
Well, I'm going to walk out.
you see the petrol price today?
Well, whatever I'm holding in my hand, I'm going to throw at you. So let's hope it's soft.
Great. I look forward to it.
Hopefully I'm holding a cushion and not a tennis ball. I don't know why I'd ever be holding a tennis ball at a dinner party, but hey, you never know. Might be a lemon. Well, as usual, Joel, always love talking to you. And I know you've got lots of things coming up. I'm not sure if you can talk about any of them, but there's more to come. We have Urban Hunters, The Dreaded Mr. Snipe. We have a follow-up graphic novel to that. You've got
Mrs. Mortimer.
Oh, the hideous Mrs. Mortimer. I love that. And then you've got more middle grade coming and more middle grade coming, which we shall not speak of today, but we shall speak of in the future.
But yes, we've got contracts coming.
Absolutely. But it's a joy to, you know, have met you as an artist, as a creative, to have sort of worked with you, alongside you in the periphery of your creativity of the Urban Legend Hunters, and then, you know, also to have you as a friend. So it's just the whole gamut of awesomeness.
Because here's the thing, Danny, just to finish up, like, we can talk about community, but I feel like even in connecting with you and James and then doing creative collaboration is essentially what we were doing, like editing through and working on stuff, like the stuff that we've just been talking about. We haven't just been talking about, we've been living for the last 2 years, which is amazing. I've really loved that. So I want to honor you in that, and Words and Nerds and the community that you form around you in all that you do, in all the spaces you get to. It's really amazing.
Oh, thank you. And I probably needed that little extra bit of something today. So it's no secret that, you know, anxiety is my lion that comes out of its den. So thank you. I really appreciate that, because I think community and creativity saves so many of us. So
it really does. It.
And thank you so much for all of that, Joel. And we can't wait for all the stuff that you have coming out in the future.
Woohoo! Thanks for having me.